All right, Shabbos Shalom. Good morning. Good morning. Just a quick public service announcement. Because where's Ira? Ira was here. Okay. So I'll say to those who are going to the Siyum Hashas in Meretz Hashem on Wednesday. So just the Aguda has been sending out a lot of information. Make sure to read the guides, because there's a whole list of things you can bring in, you can't bring in. So just make sure to go ahead and read the guide. So you should have gotten that. Also, I think Saeed put it on the WhatsApp with that clear plastic bag from Amazon. He's not sharing with you like his holiday favorites. You know, that's actually the type of bag that you could use to bring stuff in. So just please be attentive to that. Also, in terms of busing, you know, they have not yet released the departure point for the bus. Amir Tashem, as soon as we have it, Amir Tashem.
I think it says a metro station.
I don't know. I didn't get anything about it yet. So whenever, I think we'll all get it in Amir Tashem together. And good. I'm sorry. When you have it, I'll have it. When I have it, you have it. We're all literally on the same bus, in the same boat, in the same bus. So I don't have any advance information. I'll say just a thank you to, first of all, a very special thank you to Saeed Haken, who always, Baruch Hashem, puts together such beautiful breakfast. Saeed, yashir koach, and thank you so much. A thank you to this morning's sponsors, to thank you to Jerry and Sara Wolaski for dedicating the breakfast in honor of the Shira, yashir koach, and thank you very much. To Saeed and Sima Haken for dedicating the breakfast in the Zechus of Rafu Shalema, for Sue Meyerowitz, Shulam Istova, Bas Mindel, and Le'iloi Nishmas, Sylvia Pacino, Sara Rachel Bas Avram, whose Petira Levaya was on Friday. Mel is currently sitting Shiva at his home through the end of this week. We hope that in the merit of the brachas of the Torah, that Sushin and Yeretz Hashem have a complete and enduring refuah, and Mrs. Pichino Zichron of the Bracha should have an aliyah. And we'll say, with that, let us begin. It is hard. And also, just one other announcement. As you know, now we are less than a week away from the Galasium on Matzah Shabbos. If you have not yet made your reservations, please do so. I don't know when the caterer needs a final count from, but I'd imagine it's sometime before Friday of this week. So if you can make your reservations, it's going to be a beautiful and special event. And obviously, the more of us that could participate, the greater the simcha will be. So we'll say with that, let us begin. We have a beautiful daf ahead of us today. Also, our shir this morning, all of our learning this week, very, very, very special dedication, is dedicated by Binyamin and Nechama Grossman in honor of Ira's 70th birthday. Mazel tov, Ira, ad me'a ve'esim shanim tovos. Mamish, beautiful that your children did that. Is that a surprise? Mamish, okay, beautiful. We'll say with that, let us begin. So today's daf is Samech Zayin, 67. We are picking up. And also, of course, I will say, it goes without saying that we are terribly heartbroken about the news that occurred in Muncie last night with the stabbings that occurred at a Hanukkah party in a shul in Muncie, a Rottenberg shul. And again, I think the full information has not yet been released, but obviously we have in mind those who require refuah. Some of the people who were stabbed are in critical condition. We just hope that in the merit of our learning and merit of our tfilos, that in Meretz Hashem they should have a refuah shalima. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu should just provide Klal Yisrael with a Shemira Yisera, an extra measure of divine protection, divine providence, to be able to protect us from all of the terrible evil which lurks in every corner of this world. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, those who are affected will have a refuah, and the merit Hashem in the schus of our Talmud Torah, Kodesh Baruch Hu will bring Mashiach Bekarov. All right, to both say with that, let us begin. So today's daf is Samech Zayin 67. And we are picking up Samech Vav Amud Beis, 66b. So we're actually picking up the last line of the daf. Amud Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, literally the last line. So Shmuel Bar Yitzchak said as follows, Isha lo titbal binamal, top of Samech Zayin. Literally translated, a woman should not immerse a namal. Now we'll say, Rashi says over here, a namal is porto, a port. So it's often translated as a port or as a harbor. That ultimately a woman, even though I will say again, this is a gathering of water, a woman should not use a port or a harbor as a mikvah. Now, what's the reason for that? So Rashi says over here, Makum Shasminos Nikbaos Shemalos Tit Vachotzeitz. So apparently, at least again from Rav Shmuel's perspective, that ultimately ports often had or harbors had a muddy bottom. So the concern ultimately was that she would go to the mikvah, she would immerse in it, and mud would get stuck to her. Now, of course, remember again, we're talking about over here the halachos concerning chatzitzos, interpositions. So the idea is that a woman can't go to the mikvah with anything that would serve as a chatzitza. So therefore, again, the concern is that if she immerses on the muddy bottom of the port, some of the mud ultimately will get stuck to her, serving as a chatzitza and invalidating her tevila. The afagav the hashtaleka, and even though, again, when she comes out of the water and she examines herself, she doesn't see any mud. Nevertheless, ima bir diyuni nafal. It's possible that what? That when she came out of the water and shook off her legs, that the mud came off then. So in other words, what the concern is that she came out, when she was in the water, the mud was on her. When she came out of the water, the mud was on her. And only because she shook off her legs now the mud is no longer on her. Good. So we'll say along those same lines, avu ad Shmuel, avid laban se mikvos biyomi nisan, so the father of Shmuel used to make for his daughters mikvaos during the month of Nisan, and ultimately mats to use in the river during Tishrei. Now, I will say now a bit of background about this. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Mikvaos biyomi Nisan, mikva mayim michunasin. So we'll say, so just so we analyze our terms, use our terms correctly. A mikva means a body of pooled water. So remember again, technically speaking, you could use a river as a mikvah, you could use an ocean as a mikvah, and you could use a mikvah as a mikvah. When we say mikvah in this context means a body of pooled water. What the father of Shmuel was worried about was as follows. Now, I will say, a mikvah itself cannot be running water. So for example, if you're using a mikvah of rainwater, so rainwater only works when? If it is pooled. However, again, a river, which is running water, can be used because the assumption is that the river is not fueled by rain, but rather rivers are fueled by underground springs. So underground spring water ultimately, again, can be used even if it's running. So we'll say, so the concern is as follows. What the father of Shmuel, what his concern was as follows. During the rainy season, or at the conclusion of the rainy season, when the rivers are swollen, they're often swollen from rainwater. No problem, as long as what? That water is pooled and standing. But flowing rainwater can actually be problematic. So that's why, again, what Shmuel's father used to do was as follows. Biyomi Denisan, so I'll say Nisan, remember, is the end of the rainy season. So at the end of the rainy season, he was concerned that the mikvaos that the rivers were swollen with rainwater. So therefore, if it's flowing rainwater, it can't be used as a mikvah. So what would he do? He would make mikvaos for his daughters. Now, we'll say the truth is, it's very easy to make a mikvah. Very easy, right? How first of all, we have a dedication opportunity in the new building. It's very easy. It's $150,000, and it's yours. It's your mikvah. So we'll say, so. But aside from that, what he used to do was as follows. He would make a channel from the river into a pit. Right, so all you need to do, remember, the only issue with rainwater is that what? It can't be flowing. So his concern was at the end of the rainy season, the rivers are swollen with rainwater, and it's flowing rainwater, not good for immersion. See, he would create mikvos for his daughters. Channel off some water. I mean, again, or he just collected rainwater. I don't know which one. But again, either way, you could just channel off the water there. However, again, biyomei Tishrei, I will say Tishrei, remember, is the end of the summer. So by the end of the summer, again, there's not a concern with rainwater. There, he didn't mind if his daughters went ahead and used the rivers for mikvos. The concern he then had was the muddy bottoms of the river. So what he did was he made mats, so that when they would go to the mikvah, they would place their feet down on the mats. This way, their feet would not sink down into the mud. Now you can see this all in Rashi. Mikvaos biyomi nisan. Rashi says mikvah mayim michunasan ve'inon tovlos benar lefi sherabu hamayim bimos agishamim migishamim shenaflu v'chayish shema yirbu notfin al hazochlin. The Tanya B'Torah's Konim, Ma Ma'ayon Tar B'Zochlin, Af Mikvah Tar B'Zochlin, Kilomar Shema Bila B'Mechunasin, Derech Sikilosan, Kodim Shenikvu B'Nachom Mikot, Ham Lomar, Shkini Yomar Lai, Ach Ma'ayon, Ma'ach Ma'ayon, Ma'ayon Metar B'Zochlin, Ve'ha Mikvah Metar Ba'ash Boron. So we'll say a Ma'ayon, a spring, could afford Tara, even if it's flowing, but a Mikvah is only Metar Ba'ash Boron. What's Ashboren? Says Rashi. Mao Ashboren? The Kavu Vakaimi. The In Matbilin Bemechunasin Ela Mishin Kavu LeMikvehen. So we'll say, so this is just an interesting idea that Alocha LeMaisa, spring water can be Metayer even if it is flowing. Rain water can only be Metayer if it is collected. So remember, this was a concern of Shmuel's father, just that when the rivers were swollen with rainwater, if it's flowing, the immersion might not be good. So he just created standing mikvos. When it was clear at the end of the summer that the rivers were really primarily spring water, then halacha lemaisa, he allowed his daughters to be immersed there. The concern he had was al tzchatzitza, interposition. The mud on the bottom could stick to their feet while they're doing the immersion. Therefore, he made them mats. Incredible. Amrav Gidl, Amrav. So we'll listen to this. Rav Gidl, the name of Rav. So we'll say, still on the topic of chatzitzos, of interpositions. Nosna tavshil libna v'tavla v'alsa lo alsa la tvila. So we'll listen to this interesting case. What happens if a woman is preparing food for her child? Now we'll say, now the interesting part over here is, the assumption is, what type of food are we talking about? Sticky food. She prepared some type of sticky food for her child. What's the concern over here? The concern is that Lamaisa, some of the food stuck to her. She went to the mikvah, and the food was there ultimately when she did her immersion. That food then serves as an interposition, as a chatzitza. So what's the halacha? Lo also la tvila. The tvila doesn't work. Afa gav da hashtaleka. Even though now after she does the immersion, she looks at her hands, and she doesn't see any food there, there's still a concern that what? Am Eimar bir diyuni nafa. The concern was the food was there, but when she came out of the water, the food fell off. So remember again, these concerns are obviated, how? By doing some type of bedika prior to immersion. This is, again, we've already started the halachos of chafifa, of a woman's preparation for the mikvah. We're going to continue it a little bit on Amud Beis. But this is why before a woman goes to the mikvah, right, there is an obligation for her to check her body. Right, not a bedika, like I mean, like during Shivanika, like an internal examination. Literally, again, checking her body to make sure that there's nothing on her that would potentially serve as a chatzitza. So here the Gemara gives you another sensitivity. If she's preparing food for her family, and it happens that some of the food is sticky food, she has to be choshesh, she doesn't want any of the food sticking to her before she goes into the mikvah. Amrami bar Abba. Well, so here we go. Hani ravdi dikusilta. Very interesting case. These, look at Rashi. Ravdi tikusilta, the darkon shalmakos shalakazas dam lahalos gas. We'll say what these are scabs from bloodletting. Scabs from bloodletting. So we'll say, so now what happens if a woman has scabs from bloodletting? What Gemara is really asking over here is, what's the implication of a scab? Legabe chatzitza. So here we go. See, for the first 3 days that the scab is formed, it does not serve as a chatzitza. After 3 days, the scab becomes a chatzitza. Rebbe say, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Tlasa yomi, galdan rach, because for the first 3 days, the scab is soft. So when the scab is soft and it's flesh-like, it's part of her body. As long as it's part of her body, it's not called the chatzitza. Interestingly enough, after the 3 days, what happens, Rebbe say? After the 3 days, the scab hardens. And once it hardens, it becomes like an alien substance. Or actually, not aliens, foreign substance, right? It becomes something that's foreign to the body, and therefore, again, serves the chatzitza. So by the way, here you see the dramatic concept of chatzitza. So you see, I will say, when we think about chatzitza, how do you often think about chatzitza? Okay, too busy with the eggs. Good. I'll tell you. So again, right, when you think about chatzitza, so think of chatzitza is something that is not part of her body. Right? So for example, right, the issue over here, let's say the mud on the feet that we saw before. You can't immerse in the harbor because the mud gets on the feet. Father Shul was concerned about the mud. So I understand, mud is something. So I'll say, now what the Gemara is saying is that no, even something that is technically, the scab is part of the body, but if it begins to take on an identity as something that stands out as a different part of the body, then it serves as chatzitza. So we'll say, and the dramatic part about it is, you could have the same scab, right? The same scab when it's quote-unquote softer and fleshy for the first 3 days, that's part of the body, not a chatzitza. 3 days it becomes hardened, then ultimately, again, that becomes a chatzitza. And I will say, again, we're going to try to do, we're going to see some more halacha nice of this, but again, scabs is a very important, is a very important part of a woman's preparation for the mikvah, right? If she does have a scab, then often, again, that has to be removed prior to going to the mikvah. So the Gemara goes weiter. Amar mar ukva, lifluf sheba'ayim. What's another interesting case? Lifluf literally is mucus. Person has mucus by the eye. So the Gemara says, lach eno chotzeitz, so if it's moist, it is not a chatzitza. Yavesh chotzeitz, if it's dried, then ultimately it's a chatzitza. A masay nikra yavesh, so at what point in time does it become dry? Misha'a shemaschil liyarek, when it begins to turn green. So if a person has like a woman has a mucusy crust, right, the Ginesh, then that serves as a chatzitza. So we'll say, even though you're talking about something that is very minute, once it crusts over, the maisa again, then it forms as a chatzitza. Next, Amr Shmuel. Kachol Shebesochai. And this is actually very interesting. So kachol was some type of cosmetic. So if a woman has this cosmetic inside of her eye, Nabo said, this is fascinating. Apparently, they used to apply the cosmetic literally in the eye itself. On the eye, which is actually quite fascinating. So kachol shebesochayin, if it's on the eye, in the eye, it's not a chatzitza. Shagabi ha'ayin, if it's on the eye, right on top of the eye, like on the eyelid, chotzeitz, that's ultimately a chatzitza. However, vim hayu einah parchos, Shmuel says, we're going to see also, a lot of the halachos concerning chatzitzos are also societal, subjective, we'll see, depending on what a person normally does. So, however, again, in hayu einah parchos, but listen to this, interestingly enough, if she blinks a lot, afilo agabi ha'ayin eino chotzeitz, then even if the kachol, right, even if the eye makeup is on her eye, it doesn't serve as a chatzitza. Why not? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, parchos, posachas va'otzemes tadir. If she opens and closes her eyes often, meaning she blinks often, benkach u'benkach eno chotzitz, lefi shepricha'sa ma'avirasa ve'eno ava gabe an ve'embo mamish. So we'll say, interestingly enough, if she blinks a lot, so what ends up happening? She ends up blinking the kachal into her eye. I guess the consistency of the kachal was such that when you blinked a lot, it kind of got absorbed into the eye itself. Good. So it goes weiter. Amar Rav Yochanan, Pascha, is also quite fascinating. Pascha eineha biyoser, o atzma eineha biyoser, lo also latu. We'll say, watch this. If a woman opened her eyes too much, or closed her eyes too much when entering into the mikvah, the tvila is not good. Now, we'll say, what does that mean? So we'll say, remember this again. This case is a little bit more understandable with closing, right? If you close your eyes too much and you squeeze shut, something ends up happening. Water doesn't access certain parts, certain closed parts. So we'll say, interestingly enough, obviously, there's no obligation for the water to enter the eyes of the woman. But the idea that the Gemara is stressing to us is that halacha lemaisa, when a woman goes to the mikvah, her body must be in a relaxed, normal, natural state. If anything is too accentuated, then lemaisa, again, the tefillah is not good. So if her eyes are very open, right, the openness of her eyes causes the water not to come in contact with certain areas. Her eyes are squeezed shut, then ultimately, again, that causes water not to come in contact with certain areas. Incredible, incredible halach. The Gemara says, rather, Amar Reish Lakish, Ha'isha lo titbal ela derech gidilasa. So this is very interesting. When a woman goes to the mikvah, she should go to the mikvah, what they call derech gidilasa. Look at Rashi. Lo titbal ela kederech gidilasa. Kilomar, lo titchok zroaseha al besara, v'lo ragla v'shokeha zebaze, ela kederech halichaza v'shimusha tamid. So when a woman goes to the mikvah, she should assume a posture of like normal, everyday posture. What does that mean? So for example, Rashi says, she should not keep her arms too tightly close to her body. She should not keep her legs, her feet, too close together. The idea being that when she goes to the mikvah, she should assume a normal, relaxed posture. Normal, relaxed posture. So the Gemara says, "Umash nichnas v'kamut vein mayim ba'in lo ichpas lan vein atzricha lefashet beis kmatel." They both say, now, by the way, this works both ways. The idea being is, you might have thought that when she goes to the mikvah, maybe she's obligated to like extend her arms all the way out. This way, the water hits every part of her arm, her underarms. No, she's not obligated to do that. Rather, when she immerses into the mikvah, she just keeps a what we'll call in a state of limb relaxation. Right? So we'll say, what's the definition of limb relaxation? However you normally have your body on any general given day, that's what she has to do. So interestingly enough, don't tense up. Don't tense up, because then there's a concern that ultimately, again, water doesn't come in contact with certain ways, but on the same time, she's not obligated to spread out her arms, to spread out her legs, to make sure that halacha l'maisa, the water comes in contact with every part of her body. Very important to halacha. So what we'll say, the Gemara gives another example of this. Ha'ish nirakadon. They're both saying, now, interestingly enough, the Gemara is bringing a raya. If you look at Rashi, gabi ri'ias negoim shetir ba'hen beis astarim. So we'll say, for example, the Gemara brings a raya over here. This is quite fascinating. For tzaras, so we'll say, let's say a person presents with a particular negav tzaras, a potential negav tzaras. They have to go to the kohen, right? The kohen examines them. So it's like, what position do you have to assume, right, when the kohen goes in and examines you for tzaras? So we'll say, so I want to point something out, which is quite fascinating. Tzara'as bebeis hastarim, Rashi says over here, is not metame. Right? Kabiriyas negarim shetireba in makasu beis hastarim dechsev l'chol mare ene akoin. So also listen to this. So the halacha is that if tzara'as appears on what we call beis hastarim, which is quote-unquote a hidden part of the body, that is not problematic tzara'as. So we'll say, see, interestingly enough, what the Gemara then deals with is, so what is the definition of beis hastarim? What's the definition of a hidden part of the body? So, for example, the Gemara says, "So ish nira keoder umosik." For a man, he assumes the position as if he is hoeing or if he is gathering olives. I guess that was helpful, right? Once upon a time, right? Hoeing or gathering olives. I will say now, what it does tell you is as follows. Is you can imagine when you're hoeing, like when you're shoveling. So we'll say, so what happens when you're shoveling? So what's the imagery? Your arms are a little bit lifted away from your body, right? If you're shoveling, right, your arms are a little bit lifted off your body. But what's not happening? Your arms are not fully lifted up. So, for example, the only area of the armpit area that's examined is the part that you would be able to see when shoveling, which is very big. Because what that tells you is if a person has a nega, that's in, let's say, the crevice of the armpit, that would not be visible when shoveling or gathering olives. So, ultimately, again, that would not be problematic for tzaras. So, for example, same idea. The issue over here with gathering olives is what would you have when you're gathering olives? Is you would bend down. When you would bend down, there's a certain amount that, let's say, a person's thighs are exposed. Those exposed areas would be examined for tzaras, but anything that would not be exposed ultimately would not be examined for tzaras. So I will say, so again, all you want to try to bring up over here is in the same way that tzaras, which is interesting, the coin only, because remember, it's based on a pasuk. The pasuk says, what does the coin examine? L'chol mare ene ha-coin. Whatever the coin could see, that's what he examines. What that tells me is, any part of the body that's not normally exposed is not subject to Kohanic examination for tzaras. So therefore we tell a person, assume the regular position of shoveling, of hoeing, or of gathering olives. You might just bring this as an example, same way when a woman goes to the mikvah. What do we tell her when she goes into the mikvah? What do we tell her? Be relaxed, right? Whatever, don't tense up. Don't hold your arms together, your legs together, meaning whatever is your normal body relaxed position, that's how you go into the mikvah. And in fact, interestingly enough, tensing up too much actually potentially compromises the tefillah. Amazing. Amar Rabba Barav Huna. Neima achas kshura chotetz. What's another very interesting case? You know that one of the halachas that a woman has to do before her chafifa, she must comb her hair. She must comb out her hair. Why? Because what's the concern? If there is a knotted hair, so we'll say if one of her hairs is knotted, then halacha lemaisa, that's a chatzitza. Because we'll say, think about this just a moment. If the hair gets a knot, if the hair gets a knot, we'll say just a late breaking thank you to Moshe Wertesheim and Baruch Fischel Kozlovsky for helping to set up the breakfast. Shkoyach, shkoyach. Anyone else? Right? Any other information? we should get like a ticker. We'll get like a ticker on the bottom of the shkoyach. So again, interestingly enough, over here, what happens over here? We'll say, so remember again, think about it just a moment. If there's a hair and there's a knot, so that knot prevents water from getting into the knotted part of the hair. Shavuot Allah said, this is why, again, halacha l'mais, a woman must comb out her hair. This is halacha before going to the mikvah. So the Gemara says over here, if she has one hair that's knotted, chotzetze. So Moshe said, that's probably, when we say chatzitza, ultimately that means it could potentially invalidate the tzvila. Amud beis. So meaning any time that a man would be obligated for a biblical tefillah, meaning if you go to the mikveh Erev Shabbos and you go ahead and you find a knot in your hair afterwards, you don't have to be tovel again. But when Mashiach comes, let's say there's biblical tefillah. Greg's raising a very important point, I will say. You know, often we speak about chatzitzas, so we speak about it legabe women for Hilchos Nida. But 100%, the halachos of chatzitza apply to any biblically mandated tefillah. So when Mashiach comes and there's a Beis HaMikdash, there's halachos of Tum and Tara, the halachos of Chatzitzas will apply for us as well. Absolutely. Shalosh, I'm a Beis. Shalosh, Einon Chotzitzah. So we'll say, what happens if she has three hairs, and she finds three hairs that are knotted? That does not create a Chatzitza. So we'll say, why is that? Because with three hairs already, that's thick enough that the knot will not be so tight so as to prevent water coming in. So the idea, remember again, she wants to avoid all knotting in her hair, but Lamaisi, if she finds knotting in three hairs, we don't assume that to be a chatzitza. Shtayim, any other. I don't know what the halacha is of two hairs, right? If it's one hair, we know is problematic. Three hairs, I know. This is Rabbi Bar Avuna. Three hairs, I know, is not problematic. Two hairs, I don't know. Rabbi Yochanan says, Anu, Ein Lano Ela Achas. Rabbi Yochanan says, the truth is, all we know is the halacha by one hair. One knotted hair is a chatzitza. That's all we know for sure. Three we know for sure. It's not two we don't know. Rabbi Yitzhak, so we'll say, I know Ein Lano Ela Achas. So we'll say, what Rabbi Yochanan is really coming along and saying is, all we know is that one hair is problematic, which Rabbi said by definition means that what? Two, three, and any more are not. So Rabbi said, comes along. So apparently, Rabbi Bar Avuna was not sure about the halacha concerning one hair. About two hairs. Rabbi Yochanan was sure about the halachas of two hairs. Only one knotted hair is a chatzitza, but ultimately, again, two or more are not problematic, because the assumption is the knot will not be so tight so as to prevent water from getting in. Incredible. So we'll say, now we come to a fascinating discussion. Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, Dvar Torah. So we'll say, now here we go. Rubo ha-makpid alav chotzeitz. So we'll listen to this. Midoraisa, if a woman has a chatzitza, and the chatzitza covers most of her body, and she's makpid. What does makpid mean? Makpid means, very simply, she would be, what's the right word for this? I'm sorry?
Object.
Good. I'll give you a good little sense. She wouldn't go out like this, right? So it covers the majority of her body, and she's makpid. There's a better word than object. Self-conscious. Maybe self-conscious is the right word. Okay, right. She objects to good. She's self-conscious about it. She's makpid. In other words, this is not something that she would want to go out with. So these terms are very important. Rubo makpid. So if the chatzitza covers the majority of her body, and she's makpid on it, she objects to it, she's self-conscious to it, chotzitz. Then I will say, that is a chatzitza. So I'll say, so the biblical definition of a chatzitza is rubo umakpid, covers the majority of the body, and ultimately, again, she objects to his presence. She's self-conscious about it. Rubo ve'eno makpid, what happens if it covers the majority of her body? But she's not makpid. She's not something that per se bothers her. Ino chotzeitz, ultimately, again, midoraisa, that does not serve as a chatzitza. However, ve'gazru al rubo she'eno makpid, mishum rubo ha-makpid. But Chazal goes there, Chazal legislated, that any chatzitza that covers the majority of her body, even if what? Even if she is not makpid on it, ultimately, again, Chazal said, it's still problematic. So Chazal goes there, on rubo ve'eno makpid, in order to safeguard the case of rubo umakpid. Okay, now we go on. The gazu al mi'uto ha-makpid, mishum rubo ha-makpid. Furthermore, they also legislated, even on a chatzitza that is a miut. Miut ha-makpid. Rabbi said, let's say she has a chatzitza on her body that only covers a very small part, but she's self-conscious about it. She objects to it, right? So Chazal said, in that kind of case, that case of miut u-makpid will also be aser alts rubo u-makpid. So we'll say, see, falls to just one more time. So do'oraisa, the only type of chatzitza that's truly problematic is what? Remember we said it 47 seconds ago? Right? Rubo umakbid. Rubo umakbid. I will say that is the type of chatzitza that is biblically problematic. Rubo umakbid covers the majority of the body and she objects to it. Chazal legislated rubo umakbid. Therefore what? Rubo ve'eno makbid. Even if it covers the majority of her body and she doesn't object to it, it's still going to be aser. And furthermore, Chazal extended one more, which is miut umakbid. Even if it only covers, so we'll say, so essentially, any time you have an element of the Doraisa is rubo umakbid. That's the Doraisa. Chazal said, even if it's rubo ve'eno makbid, or even if it's miut umakbid, that's ultimately, again, will form a chatzitza. And I will say, this is halacha lemaisa. Halacha lemaisa. So a woman goes to the mikvah, and ultimately, again, she comes out, and there's a chatzitza, and it only covers a very small part of her body. But it's something ultimately, I will say, I'll give you the best example of this. Give the best example of miut umakbid. Woman goes to the mikvah, she comes out of the mikvah, she realizes that what? She didn't remove nail polish from one of her fingers. So I will say, so most women would not go out of the house with one fingernail painted and the rest not. That's the case of miut umakbid. Miut umakbid. So we'll say, so in such a situation like that, we'll tell the woman to go back and immerse again. That's not daraisa. That's not daraisa. That's dirabanan. Remember again, the daraisa is rubo umakbid. Mid dirabanan, we include rubo ve'eno makbid or miut umakbid. I said, the Gemara says, V'ligzar nami al mi'uto she'eno makbid. Why don't you also include the case of miut ve'eno makbid? So a chatzitza that covers only a very small part of the body, and she's makbid. Mishum mi'uto makbid, because we both say, we should be goes around that, lest you come to be lenient with the case of miut makbid. To which the Gemara says, no. Miut makbid itself, hi gufa gzera, va'ana nekom v'nigzar gzera gzera. So we'll say, so in the case of miut ve'eno makbid, that's already too far removed to go ahead and be goes. So we'll say, so this is very important. So give you the contrast. So for example, let's say a woman comes out of the mikvah. She comes home, she finds a little bit of nail polish. Or this happens on a little bit on her toenail. So we'll say, so again, that would be a case usually of miut ve'eno makbid. It's a very small part, and a person would go out often with a little speck of something, especially on the toenail that could be covered. So we'll say, so that would be a case of miut ve'eno makbid, in which case would not serve as a chatzitza, would not be problematic. Shabbos says, so again, it's interesting, so many shaylas, post tevila shaylas come up, and this Shabbos say, here you have it. So again, one more time, the daraisa is rubo umakbid. The dirabanan is rubo, even if you're not makbid, or miut umakbid. The only case that's not problematic is what? Miut ve'ino makbid, right? If it's so small she doesn't care about it, that's not problematic at all. Good. Amarav. Nida bizmana. This is just such an incredible daf. Amarav nida bizmana eno tevelas ela belayla. We'll say a woman a nida when she goes to the mikvah should only go to the mikvah at night. At night, look at Rashi bizmano bishvi'i ubenida daraisa kamar shlo suffer zayin kiyem balayla. So we'll say, so this actually over here is talking about a nida daraisa. Remember again, a daraisa nida means that she's only observing what? Remember, midaraisa, what's hilchos nida rabosai? 7 days. No shivin akiyim, just straight up 7 days. So the Gemara says that she should only go to the mikvah the night of the eighth day. So she observes seven days. That night, after the seventh complete day, she goes to the mikvah. V'shalo bizmana, tovelas bein v'yom bein malayla. But interestingly enough, shalo bizmana, rabosai, let's say again, she didn't go to the mikvah the eighth night. Whatever, she got delayed. So once you pass the eighth night, so then halach lamaisa, a woman could go to the mikvah both by day and by night. Okay? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, no. Bein bizmana, bein shelo bizmana, eino tovelas ela balayla. So what Rabbi Yochanan says, whether she's going to the mikvah on time or later on, a woman could only go to the mikvah at night. Why? Mishum srach bita. Out of a concern that she may confuse her daughter. The boss said, now what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Mishum srach bita, shenoheges achareha litbol bayom, vaafilo bizmana, vaasile de kares, velo yada diima bishminihu, ditfilo bas. Listen to this. She will say, so the primary way in which girls learn what to do in life is, you know, Rabbi Soloveitchik called this the mimetic tradition, right? You look what your mother did. You look what your mother did. So we'll say, see even in the realm of Taras HaMishpacha, a girl learns often what to do from her mother. If she sees her mother going to the mikvah by day, The girl doesn't know that the mother is going on the 8th day or the 9th day. It's already after Zmana. Rather, the girl just knows that her mother is going to the mikvah. If she sees her mother going to the mikvah by day, she will think that what? That immersion in the mikvah is permitted by day. And I will say, this could be incredibly problematic. Why? Because halacha lemaisa, if that girl ends up going to the mikvah, let's say during the day of the 7th day and is potentially with her husband, that could be an iser kares. So therefore, in order to avoid any type of confusion, we only go to the mikvah at night. Only go to the mikvah at night. Va'af, Rav Hadarbei. And even Rav himself, who originally said that a tefillah shelo bizmano, which Rabbi Yosef means a tefillah that takes place after, already after the permitted time. She goes to mikvah, she's delayed in going to the mikvah. Even Rav, who originally said that tefillah shelo bizmano could be by day, recanted. Dana v'chiv Rashi amar Rav, nida bein bizmano, bein shelo bizmano, eino toveles, ela balayla mishum srach bita. But even Rav came along and said, you know what, we don't allow a woman to go to the mikvah by day. Right? Because out of concern that what? Out of a concern that she's going to go ahead and confuse her daughter. And I will say, this is how we pass in halacha l'maaseh. The only time that a woman goes to the mikvah by day is a kala. Right? That's the only time we take a woman. There are now, I should take that back. There are exceptions. We're going to see actually some exceptions that there are extreme circumstances where if a woman is not going to have access to a mikveh at night, we will allow for immersion by day. We're going to see some of those extreme examples in just a moment, but lamaisa, under normal circumstances, Rabbi say, whether a woman is going to the mikveh bizmana, right after, for our purposes, her shiva nikiyim, or again, for that matter, again, sometime later on, we pass in tevila is balayla for exactly this reason, out of a concern that if you allow nidos to begin to go to the mikveh by day, you're going to create confusion. And women, even bizmana, will end up going to the mikvah by day. But some exceptions to this rule. This is incredible. Askin Ravidi ben Arash. Ravidi, paskin in the city of Narash, lemitbal biyoma detamnia. He allowed women to go to the mikvah on the 8th day. Now, just to point out, the 8th day, remember, we're talking about biblical nidus over here. So biblical nidus, remember again, nidus lasts for how long? 7 days. So what he would do is like this. They couldn't go to the mikvah at night. You'll see why in just a moment. He allowed them to go during the day of the 8th day. Why? Mishum Aryusa. Because apparently there were lions in Narash. There were lions in Narash. And I will say again, apparently the lions, I guess the lions were nocturnal lions. So I will say, so ultimately again, so therefore he allowed them to go by day, or I guess maybe by day they could take security with them, whatever it is. He allowed them, so I will say, so what do you begin to see over here? What do you begin to see? You begin to see that when there's an element of danger, that ultimately again, daytime immersion may be permitted. For example, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Bipapunya, Mishum Ganvi. Rav Acha bar Yaakov allowed women to go to the mikvah by day. Remember, this would be delaying the mikvah. So I want to be clear. This is not, he didn't allow them to go by day. When? On the 7th day. Remember, that's clear. This is, they're delaying it. They're going on the 8th day. Mishum Ganvi. So there was dangerous to go out at night. It was dangerous to go out at night. Rav Yehuda b'pumpadisa mishum tzina. Rav Yehuda allowed women to go to the mikvah by day, on the 8th day, because of cold temperatures. Mishum tzina. Rav b'mechuza mishum abuloi. So Rav b'mechuza allowed women to go to the mikvah by day on the 8th day because of abuloi. And Rashi says abuloi over here is sho arei ha'ir ve'ov de'kochavim. So we'll say, so it's not clear exactly what was happening over here. Either it's that sometimes the gatekeepers would go ahead and close the gates, locking women out of the city when they went to the mikvah, or it could be that these men were immoral individuals and would try things with these women, and therefore, as a way of safeguarding the women, ultimately, again, they would allow them to go to the mikvah by day. Okay, so we'll say, so this definitely serves as the halachic precedent that under extreme circumstances, sometimes immersion by day is in fact permitted. Amrali Rav Papa l'Rav Ola Abaye. So Papa said to Rav Ola Abaye, Michte ha'idna kulu safek zavos shavin rabbanon. So I'll say, interestingly enough, today, we're fast-running a little bit. We're now going from biblical nida to contemporary nida. So I'll say, remember again, so today, how do we observe hilchos nida? When the woman becomes a nida, Rav Ola Abaye, essentially what we say is every woman becomes a safek zava gidola. So that's why again, Rabbi was saying contemporary observance of Hilchos Nida. So what do we say? Everyone has to observe Shiva Nikiyim. They will say, you know, we've been around the Talmudic block enough to know Shiva Nikiyim 7 clean days has nothing to do with Nida. Right? A woman who is in Nida Midarais doesn't need 7 clean days. She just has 7 days in which she's in Nida. Whether she's bleeding, she's not bleeding, doesn't make a difference. Once she experiences menstrual flow, 7-day period begins. Whether she bleeds the entire time or part of the time is inconsequential. As long as she stops bleeding when? By the end of the 7th day, she can go to the mikvah that night, and that's it. Today, the way we observe Hilchos Nida is we've essentially had a merging of the halachos of Nida and Zava Gidola. So that's what happens by us, as woman becomes a Nida, right? And therefore, that because she might be bleeding, she might be a Nida, might be a Zava, she has to observe 7 clean days. That's how it works. So that's the merging of Keter. So let's listen to this. So now that today all of our women, Kulu, Safik, Zava, Shavinu, Rabbanon, Litbalinu, Biyamama, Dishiva. So this really should go ahead and create the leniency. A woman should be permitted to go to the mikvah the day of the 7th day of the Shiva Nikiyim. Why? Listen to this. Look at Rashi. Litbalinu biyamama dishiva. Mimanashach. In, bless you. In nidahi harayom tilasi yosem izayin luryasa. Vimzavi tavela zavabiyom. Let's listen to this. If she's a nida, so already it's way past her permitted time to be tovel. Right? And again, Rav said before that a tvila shelo bizmana, she can be toveles by day. And if she's a Zava Gidola, Rabbo said, the halacha by Zava Gidola, is a Zava Gidola is permitted to be toveles on the 7th day of her Shiva Nikiyim. She can't be with her husband that night until that night, but Lamai says she's permitted to go to the mikvah by day. So today in contemporary Hilchos Nida, a woman should be permitted to go to the mikvah during the 7th day. If she's a Nida, she's already way past the time she could have gone to the mikvah. And even if she's a Zava Gidola, Zava Gidola could go to the mikvah the day of the 7th day. To which the Gemara says, Mishnah Rabbi Shimon, it's because of Rabbi Shimon, those Rabbi Shimon say, Disanya, Achar, Titar, so we'll say the Pasuk says, Vimtahara Mizova, Visafra La Shivasa, we'll say by Zava Gidola. Zava Gidola will go ahead and count 7 clean days, the Achar Titar, and then she will be pure, then she will be Tahora. So the Gemara says, Achar Lukulon, Shalotei Tuma, Mafsekes Bina. So what does that teach me? That teaches me that all days of her Shiva Nikiyim must be totally tumah free. Totally tumah free. Right? She cannot go ahead and have any tumah during those Shiva Nikiyim. Rabbi Shimon says, Achar Titar, Achar Maisa Titar. Rabbi Shimon says, no. What it means is as follows. It means that Halacha LeMaisa, look at Rashi for just a moment, Achar Maisa, Kevan Shesapra Miktas Hayom Shal Zayin, Titar Ayedei Tevila. Vosei Bishimon says the concept of Miktas Hayom Kikulo. Literally, again, that once she observes the beginning of the 7th day of her Shiva Nikiyim, so Miktas Hayom Kikulo, part of the day counts as the whole, she should be able to go to the mikvah immediately. Aval Amru Chachamim Asr La'asos Kein Shema Tavo Lidei Safek. Even though Rabbi say, technically speaking, this is true. Once she observes part of the 7th day, Miktas Hayom Kikulo, part of the day counts as the whole, And therefore, halacha lemaisa, she should be able to go to the mikvah right at the beginning of the 7th day. The chum stepped in, the chum said, no, we don't want you to do that. What are we concerned about, Rabbi Hussein? What we're concerned about is, what happens if she's with her husband that day? And it turns out that later on she bleeds. It turns out that what? Or she has an emission. It turns out that she's still a zava. And now that she is zava, she's a zava out of relations with her husband. So therefore, the chazal came along and said, even though technically speaking, Rabbi Shimon, you may be right. That mixasim kukulo, we don't want women going to the mikvah during the day, lest they come to be with their husband, and even if it turns out that she bleeds later on, retroactively they committed a serious transgression. Okay, so I'll say, so now we begin another sugya. Amar Rav Huna. So as we're going to begin this sugya today, and Amir Tashem will continue it into tomorrow. Amar Rav Huna. Now, what we have established is the need ultimately again for chafifa. Before a woman goes to the mikvah, she must go ahead and prepare herself, right? Literally making sure that there are no interpositions. So we'll say, now we're going to get into the. So how does this normally work? The way this normally works is a woman does a chafifa the day before she goes to the mikvah. So let's suppose a woman's supposed to go to the mikvah on Sunday night. So when does she do her chafifa? Sunday afternoon. Now remember, the ideal is we want a woman doing a chafifa during the day. Why? Because the concern is if she does it at night, what's going to happen? she's going to rush. She wants to go to the mikvah, she's going to rush. This way we tell her, do it during the day. There's no rush, because she can't go to the mikvah anyway until nightfall. What we're going now to get into is, what happens if halacha lemaisa, she's not going to the mikvah that night? So what amount of distance can you have between, or space can you have, what amount of time can you have between the chafifa and the immersion? So for example, Amar Rav Huna, Isha chafefes be'echad b'shabbos, v'toveles b'shlishi b'shabbos. A woman could do a chafifa on Sunday afternoon, v'toveles b'shlishi. Now we'll say, toveles b'shlishi means what? And she can go to the mikvah Monday night. Monday night is Tuesday, right? So technically speaking, she could do a chafifa on Sunday afternoon and go to the mikvah Monday night. How do I know that? She came Isha chafefes be'erev shabbos, v'toveles b'matzei shabbos. So we know that what? If a woman has a tevila, a woman has to go to the mikvah on Matzei Shabbos, Saturday night. When does she do her chafifa? Friday afternoon. So you see from here that you could have a day in between the chafifa and the tevila. So the Gemara wants to suggest that the same way that she could do her chafifa on Erev Shabbos and go to the mikvah Matzei Shabbos, right? So too, if she does a chafifa on a regular Sunday afternoon, she could also go to the mikvah Monday night. You could have up to a day in between. Furthermore, Isha chofefes be'echad b'shabbos v'tovelas b'revi b'shabbos. Wow. Woman could even do a chafifa on Sunday and go to the mikvah when? On Tuesday night. Right? Revi means Tuesday night. How do I know that? Shekein isha chofefes be'erev shabbos v'tovelas b'matzah yom tov shechalios achar shabbos. Why Rabbi say? Because the woman could do a chafifa. Rabbi, let's say the following situation. Let's say you have Shabbos that goes into yom tov, assuming one day yom tov. So let's say again, a woman has to go to the mikvah when? On Sunday night, which is Matzah Yom Tiv. So when does she do her chafifa? On Friday afternoon. So you see already that you can even have 2 days distancing. Now, say what the Gemara is suggesting, what Rav Huna is suggesting is, once this works in a case of need, it works even in a case of discretion. So once you see, for example, that a woman could do a chafifa on Friday afternoon for a Matzah Shabbos Tevila, that tells you that what? She could also do a chafifa on any given Sunday afternoon for a tevila when? On Monday night. And once you tell me that she could do a chafifa for Yom Tov that falls out after Shabbos, right? Which means she could do a chafifa on Friday afternoon for a tevila when? On Sunday night. What that also tells me is she could do a chafifa on a Sunday afternoon for when? For a chafifa ultimately again on Tuesday night. Not only that, here we go. Isha chofefes be'echad b'Shabbos. Vitovelas bechamishi b'shabbos. Wah! A woman could do a chafifa on a Sunday afternoon and go to the mikvah when? On Wednesday night. On Wednesday night. Why? Shekin isha chofefes be'erev Shabbos. Because after all, we know the woman could do a chafifa on Friday afternoon. Vitovelas b'matzei shnei yomim tovim shal Rosh Hashanah shechali osachar Shabbos. Because we'll say, what could happen? Let's say Shabbos goes into Rosh Hashanah. So what's going to happen, Rabbi Osei? She has to go to the mikvah Matzei Rosh Hashanah. So what's going to happen? So she's going to do the chafifa on Friday afternoon. Then you have Shabbos, Sunday, Monday. She's going to the mikvah on Monday night for a chafifa ultimately, again, that she did on Friday afternoon. So you see from here that what? That a woman could even do a chafifa ultimately, again, on Sunday afternoon. For when? For a tevila Wednesday night. For a tevila Wednesday night. Now, Rabbi Osei, now, what Rav Huna is trying to do is as follows. What Rav Huna is saying is, once, technically speaking, chafifa could be done in these ways of need, you could also do it this way, even at your discretion. So we'll say, how would this come up? I'll give you a very simple metzias. It takes a woman time to prepare for the mikvah. Someone has a great idea. I'm supposed to go to the mikvah on Monday night, on Tuesday night, on Wednesday night. I have a great chaf. Sunday is a fantastic time for a chafifa, right? There's JFL, there's everything else, get everybody out of the house, right? And what? Let her do her chafifa on Sunday afternoon. It's perfect. Do the chafifa Sunday afternoon, and that way again, whether she has to go to the mikvah on Monday night, Tuesday night, or Wednesday night, we see a mitzvah. So this is incredible. So what Rav Huna is coming along and saying is, once we see that such a space between chafifa and tevila works in cases of need, it should also work in cases of discretion. Rav Chista says, Kulu Arminan, Shekin Lo Arminan. Hecha de Efsher Efsher, Hecha de Lo Efsher Lovsher. We'll say, so Rav Chista disagrees. He says, Rav Huna, no. You can't, in other words, Rav Huna wants to say, since it works in a case where there's no choice, right? In a case of need, it also works in a case of discretion. Rav Chisda says, no. It works in a case of need, does not work in a case of discretion. Hecha de lo efshar, right, where you can't go ahead and do a chafifa earlier, or later I should say, for example, I will say, so when you have to go to the mikvah Matzei Shabbos, or you have to go to the mikvah on Yom Tov that falls after Shabbos, or on Rosh Hashanah that falls after Shabbos, there's no choice. Because I will say again, we'd rather a woman not do a chafifa night of, out of concern that she's going to rush the chafifa. So, in those cases, there's no choice. Where there's no choice, we let her do an earlier chafifa. But where there is a choice, we do not allow you to distance the chafifa from the tevila by such a dramatic amount. But Rav Yemar also with this will stop. Rav Yemar says, "Afilu shekein nam yarmina levad misha chafefes be'echad b'shabbes v'tavelas b'chamishi b'shabbes de'lematzei shnei yamim tom shorash hashanah shel achra shabbes lesa." The efshar de chafefes balayla v'taveles balayla. So both say Rav Yemar comes along and says, Rav Huna, I'm with you for all of the cases except the last one, right? In other words, so Rav Yemar will say, well, I'm actually okay with allowing a woman to do a chafifa on a Sunday afternoon for a tevila on Monday night, even Tuesday night, but not what? Not Wednesday night. Because they both say everyone would agree that, for example, in that case, where Rosh Hashanah falls out on after Matzei Shabbos, you would not allow them to do a chafifa on Friday afternoon, ultimately again for a Wednesday night tefillah. And both say there's a simple reason. Rosh Hashanah never falls out on Matzei Shabbos. That case doesn't happen. That's why the calendar is arranged, right? That case never happened. So because that case never happens, therefore halacha lemaisa, Rav Shabbos says, so essentially what we have, well, this will stop. We're not finished with it. So it's going to be very exciting daf tomorrow. I will say, but it's exciting every day, but tomorrow's going to be additionally exciting. And it's also Hanukkah. So what you see over here is the three machlokes. Rav Huna takes the most dramatic approach. And Rav Huna says, once you see the possibility, right, in a need case, for this is in Chafifa and Tevila, once it can be done in a case of need, it could even be done discretionally. Is it discretionally a word? Right? This right, it can also be done discretionally. Comes on Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says, no. Just because it can be done in a case of need, you cannot do it discretionally. The distance between chafifa and tevila is only in a case of need. Rav Yemar takes a compromised approach, and Rav Yemar says, Rav Chisda, I agree you could do it discretionally when there's up to 1 day or 2 days in between the chafifa and the tevila. So you could do a chafifa on a Sunday night for a Monday night tevila, for a Tuesday night tevila, but not for a Wednesday night tevila. Now, interestingly enough, he says, why? Because that case never happens. Okay, fine, I'll just end it with this. Hilchasa, Kerav Chisda, U'metaritz Rav Yemar. I both say the halacha follows Rav Chisda in accordance with the interpretation of Rav Yemar, but Amir Tashem, we'll see what that means, Amir Tashem, in tomorrow's day. Both say Shikoyach.